Here in Orlando, Florida, O-Town Compost is leading the composting revolution, recycling organic waste into a nutrient-rich resource. Join Charlie Pioli, founder of O-Town Compost, as we hear from the nation's leading voices behind the grassroots community composting movement. Welcome to the Community Composting Podcast.
If you enjoy the Community Composting Podcast and want to support future episodes, please follow the link in the episode show notes to give a small monthly reoccurring donation, even if it's $5 to $10 a month. We'll continue to come out with killer content to keep the grassroots movement rolling.
Okay, welcome to episode number 18. I have here with me Heather from Kona Compost, located in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I've been following along with your Instagram, which I think is how a lot of us community composters keep tabs on one another. And you look like you're doing great things out there in an area I thought was pretty rural, but correct me if I'm wrong. What is the demographics of Bucks County?
Yeah, so there are some rural areas, but so I live in one of the river towns, and there's a bunch of population that is right along the Delaware River. And as you kind of get further out, Bucks County is a pretty large county, but as you get further out, there's a lot of farmland and open space. So I'm sure the folks living out there are doing composting on their own, which is awesome. My concentration is really within the populated areas. So along the river towns and beyond.
I always figured the rural folks had an option just to chuck their food scraps into the woods at the very least. So we don't, you know, Orange County down here in Florida has some rural parts that we just don't serve. It doesn't make sense from a routing standpoint if you're driving that far from, you know, house to house. And yeah, they are already probably doing it, but that's great. So Heather, tell me a little bit about your like background and how you got into community composting and when you founded Kona.
Sure. Yeah. So we founded Kona in 2019. Prior to that, I was the director of a photo studio for an e-commerce company, and I was running design departments before that. And it was one of those things where gardening and composting were done when I got home. It was relaxing. I felt really good about doing it. People at the office knew that I gardened. I brought in vegetables. I talked a lot about composting, and suddenly compost started to appear on my desk. So people would drop off their banana peels and their orange rinds. And, you know, I went, okay, well, this is interesting. I've spent all of my career there basically. And in 2018, the majority of my photography department went through a round of layoffs, and I was one of them. And I made the decision not to go back to the corporate world. I had wanted to start a composting company for a while, but there's the allure of a really solid paycheck and 401k and health benefits. And some of that prevented me from doing it earlier on. And, I kind of said to myself, well, you know, here's an opportunity. I can go forward with an idea that I've had for a long time and, you know, bring service to an area where there was really no one servicing, this portion of Bucks County. And I haven't turned back. So that's kind of how it got going.
I mean, that's awesome. It sounds like you went from white collar to blue collar, which is very similar to my background story too. An office environment. And but I guess my question is, are there any composters who existed before you quit your office job that you were kind of following and where you gathered a lot of your inspiration from?
Yeah. So the first composter that I really knew about was Bennett Compost, and they service Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. So I started following them, and you know, was really interested in what they were doing, and you know, they do a really wonderful job at servicing the city. You know, but other than that, I wasn't really sure who else was composting. So I kind of went into it just knowing what I knew, and just went for it.
Wow.
You know, and then along the way, I really was introduced to such a wonderful community of composters, and really have formed a nice relationship with many people around the country, which is, to me, it, you know, for our industry, it's one of the most humbling and friendly industries that I've ever had the opportunity to belong to. So, you know, I've been able to forge, you know, nice relationships with people that some of them I've never even met in person. So.
And I assume you're part of the Community Composting Coalition.
I am. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, I was able to meet some folks when things were, a little bit quote unquote normal back in, I guess, I don't know if that was 2019. Yeah, that must've been early 2019. Yeah. Got a chance to meet a lot of folks in New York City, which was awesome.
I noticed a lot of us community composters that I've interviewed did start around 2019. Of course, there's the longtime composters who mm-hmm. started about a decade ago, like Bootstrap and maybe Bennett started that long
yeah.
ago. Yeah. But, you know, I think it really is a great opportunity for people who are in cities or towns and that are not doing it and are a little bit wary of their office corporate job and, you know, want to like actually get dirty, making a difference for something they believe in. But yeah. I see now that, you know, you have pretty robust, like your full service residential and commercial pickups. And, you know, tell us a little bit about your residential pickup service and if you do drop-offs as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have had a very much of a growing residential service. We offer mostly bi-weekly pickup, but in certain areas we do offer weekly pickups as well. And
Can I just ask, so in some like service areas you have weekly, but in others you don't offer weekly?
Yeah.
So, why is that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I'm based out of one of the river towns and I go pretty far. So I go about an hour away. And so just from, you know, keeping things a little bit more environmentally friendly and not traveling out to these folks on a weekly basis is really the decision as to why I only offer bi-weekly in certain areas. So if some folks are, you know, just much further from the home base, then, you know, kind of bi-weekly is what's available. And we offer, you know, if they're a large producer of waste, then they can get a second bucket. And that seemed to be the most efficient way to be able to service folks that are a bit further away.
Yeah, and we did the same thing. Like when I was first starting O-Town Compost in the first few months, if there was a subscriber who wanted weekly service, but was in like an island or a HOA that was not really just a pain to access, I would just, you know, for a dollar less than the weekly service, I would incentivize them to sign up for bi-weekly, but give them a second bucket. And I think that's a great way to like start off. And now that we've kind of populated that service district and it's a little bit more dense, you know, I told them like, you can go to weekly now. Like we have no problem, you know, picking up one of the two buckets and just putting you on a weekly frequency. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Has anyone kind of chastised you for driving? Like, I know there's people out there who, you know, don't see the bigger picture, but what was your response?
Yeah. So like me personally, no, I think, you know, most everybody that I speak to is very appreciative of what I'm doing, and that, you know, the service is being offered, and that, you know, I'm giving people the opportunity to make a difference, you know, as it relates to climate change and to diverting their food waste. So I haven't really caught too much flack. I just know kind of there's been some chatter about it, just here and there, but nothing really directly pinpointed at myself.
Yeah, I, you know, I just got an email today from a potential subscriber, and, you know, they said, like, I drive a hybrid, and why aren't you guys operating electric vehicles? And I told them, like, that's my goal. I can't wait until we have a fleet of electric vehicles. But, you know, we're pretty young. We're a year and a half old. You're also pretty young. And if you kind of think about it, I mean, this organic waste that we're diverting goes to the landfill and produces methane, which is many times more potent of a greenhouse gas than what's coming out of the tailpipe. So, you know, I don't want to compare like apples to oranges, but I think we are making a pretty, it's a net positive, I would assume. So,
yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, same for myself, you know, if there's the opportunity to incorporate, you know, electric vehicles or something that's much more sustainable within fleet. But, you know, I think a lot of us just really kind of start out kind of scrappy and, you know, no pun intended there, but, you know, we're doing, I think, the best that we can, right? Nobody got in this business to be a millionaire. And, you know, we're all in it for doing, you know, all of the right things for the planet and to really be of service to our communities. So, we've all got to start somewhere. So, you know, if it's using a gasoline powered vehicle for the meantime, then, I agree. I think, you know, the actions are outweighing, you know, any of the negative effects.
Yeah, I totally agree as well. So it sounds like you, how many service districts do you have? You know, how many routes, and about how many subscribers are you at now?
Yeah, so I'm actually only running once a week. So I've been able to maximize my day, right? It's a, I guess, soup to nuts. It's almost an 11-hour day. But I've been able to, you know, condense as many people as possible into one route so that I'm really only going once a week out to my customers. And we're definitely growing. It's actually been a fun August. I've gotten a lot of subscribers, and we're pushing the 120 mark of folks that have signed up, and it's been really exciting to watch somebody, you know, sign up and go, hey, my friend told me about this, or hey, I saw a yard sign in town and I'm really excited that, you know, you're here. I saw you at the farmer's market. So, you know, for me, it's a lot of visibility, and I would imagine for a lot of other folks too. It's education is a huge part of encouraging people to sign up, because people go, okay, I've heard of it. It sounds good. I don't know a whole lot about it, or I know this is good for the environment. So there's a lot of I think repetition in terms of, you know, showing up, seeing yard signs, talking to their friends, and, you know.
Yeah, the way I think of it is, like, you got to make at least three impressions with a person. And the first impression might be a yard sign or a bumper sticker. But then after a certain while, you keep showing up, you keep operating week after week. You know, the word of mouth starts to spread, and nothing's more powerful than that. You can almost just not even worry about spending money on marketing, because that's what the final nail in the coffin, I would say.
Yeah, agreed. And I think it's fun to watch neighbors tell other neighbors. And, you know, as you watch these little pockets grow, it's so exciting. It's just part of the thrill about going out to a neighborhood and going down the street and servicing, you know, multiple people. And you're like, oh my God, this is.
Yeah. Amazing. The best is when you just stop and you have side to side houses where you can just, you know, bring two buckets with you out of the truck and then just walk to both. Like, that feels so gratifying. But that's awesome. It sounds like you're doing great. I know that, you know, community composters sometimes do all their pickups on one day, kind of like you. And I feel like, you know, that's one way to do it. The other way is to maybe draw up service areas, kind of like a trash hauling company. And when people subscribe, they fall in that service area. So they're assigned a day of the week. And you have like, you know, we're operating Monday through Friday, for example, and even have multiple routes on the same day. But, you know, do you think you'll get to the point where maybe you want to draw the boundary somewhere and move it, you know, to 2 days a week or something?
I'm like this close to doing that. it's getting to the point where I'm like, I don't know that I can, you know, I'm getting to max capacity. So
yeah. Oh, yes, like, but in your vehicle, you're getting to max capacity.
Yeah. Yes, that too. It's, you know, I have one day that I'm picking up over 1,000 pounds, and it's a yeah. lot. So, from that standpoint, and then just from how many more people can I fit in? Now, granted, if neighbor next to neighbor next neighbor sign up, I mean, I can fit 10 more people, but if they sign up and they're kind of sporadic, then, mm-hmm. you know, it's
yeah,
it's,
that adds like an extra hour or two.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm pretty close to splitting routes and adding another day.
And can I ask you what vehicle you have able to hold, you said 100 plus buckets?
So the way that I'm operating is that I'm actually just emptying buckets. So we had started out as swapping buckets out, and, you know, I kind of thought about it from a plastics perspective, and I went, you know, in order to service, you know, 50 people, I need to have 100 buckets. Do I really need to, is that necessary, right? Do people care that they're getting this shiny clean bucket every single time? And what I found out is, yeah, maybe two people cared, but everyone else went, oh, okay, that's, you know, that's fine. So we really, you know, during COVID, switched over to everybody's going to have their own bucket. It's yours for the duration of your subscription. You know, we empty it out, give it a good swirl with a squeegee to get all of the, you know, the chunks out of there, and give it back to them.
Use liners?
People can use them if they want to, but I do not. So yeah, it's really just kind of keeping things pretty simple, just so that there's, you know, necessary inputs.
So you must have larger bins in your van that you aggregate the food scraps into. And what bins do you use?
So it's a combination of, you know, toter cans and just some Rubbermaid bins that I'm able to just move
like
along
with. Barrels or something.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
So yeah, it works out. It works out pretty well. And I'd say that, you know, out of all my customers, really only a handful use compostable liners. Other people just end up using paper bags that they get at the grocery store. And many people use nothing at all. They just either wash them, or some people just elect not to, and their can's kind of gross, but they're okay with that. So
yeah, no, you remind me very much of Callie of Suncoast Compost here in Tampa. Yeah. She does a similar thing, but I believe she uses like 10 or 12 gallon wheelie carts, and she just empties them, and she will sell people liners if they need them. But yeah, I mean, with that, you know, if the subscribers are not really feeling it's that important and they're cleaning their buckets themselves, I think that makes a lot of sense. I guess my question is, because I'm totally unfamiliar with this style, like we do swaps, but do you have many apartment, you know, multifamily residents who subscribe for your service who may not have a hose outside or an easy way to clean their bucket besides in their bathtub or something?
Yeah. So I have a couple people that live in apartment buildings. The one person just uses paper bags, which work really well. And they're on a biweekly schedule. It doesn't keep the bucket squeaky clean, but it definitely helps with keeping it moderately clean. And one of the other people, I don't know if they clean their bucket or not, but they don't use any liners.
Tell people that liners, they do get holes in them pretty often. And, even with a liner, you still get the juice at the bottom. It does prevent the chunks, but you still get the juice. So,
yeah. It's, you know, I try as I'm emptying buckets to make sure that there's, you know, little to nothing in there. You know, sometimes there's coffee grounds that you just can't get out. But, you know, if people have a garbage disposal, then, you know, a quick rinse in the sink will do it just fine.
Cool. And does your dog always ride shotgun with you?
You know, she used to. The routes got so big that she's got so much. She's really good at napping, but, you know, she's got a lot of energy, and I didn't think it was fair. But in the beginning, she used to come out and, you know, just take a snooze in the seat and let me do my thing. And it was really nice to have her company. But it's too much.
I did the same thing with my dog Ginger until our route just got too big. But I would call her my quality control specialist because she would sniff out contamination. So
nice.
I mean, not actually. I wish I could have trained her to sniff out contamination, but
that would be nice. Yeah, get those stickers out of there.
Yeah. As you start to take on more food scraps, you realize very quickly that you need a better composting system to process the material. This is why I highly recommend the aerated static pile microbin designed and made easy by O2 Compost. In 60 days, I have finished compost without putting in the labor of turning the pile. The piles heat up to over 140 degrees, killing pathogens, weed seeds, and fly larvae, making the end product safe to use in the garden. With 32 plus years of experience in the compost industry, Peter Moon, owner of O2 Compost, is a leading expert in the field of ASP composting. I encourage you to set up a free half an hour consultation with Peter Moon by going to his website, www.o2compost.com. That's the letter O, the number 2, compost.com. If you mention that you heard about O2 Compost on this podcast, you'll receive a 10% discount on the purchase of the Microbin Compost Training Program. So yeah, I got a lot of information about your residential service. And I see that you also service commercial businesses. And is that on a separate route, or how do you manage that? And, you know, how many accounts do you have? What type of generators are they? Offices, restaurants, cafes, et cetera?
Yeah, so we're just starting to get into that. So we don't actually have any commercial as of yet, but you know, a lot in the beginning we were going, okay, like let's figure this out. You know, I didn't want to not include that as we were starting, but we really needed to figure out, you know, logistics and how to operate and make it as efficient as possible. So you know, we're at that point where everything is ready to go for commercial folks. So happy to welcome, you know, as many folks that want to sign up for commercial service. But yeah, we just, you know, I couldn't handle it, to be perfectly honest, you know, when we first started.
So what is the checklist for you? You said you have everything to ready to take your first commercial accounts. Like, what are going down the list? Kind of what in your head were those things you needed to prepare for?
Yeah, so it was like, okay, how are we going to, you know, logistically do this on the route? So, you know, we have routing software. I think one of the same softwares that you use and a bunch of other folks, which, you know, makes servicing anybody so much easier, just from a logistics standpoint. So getting that in place was really important, and having, you know, a vehicle to handle, you know, the amount of waste that could potentially come from a commercial client. So, you know, we're using transit vans, which work really, really well for hauling stuff. And
cargo vans.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, like the big Amazon trucks that you see out and about. That's what we're using.
Awesome.
So,
how would you get a heavy, you know, 32 gallon tote into your transit van, or even if that's the container you would even use?
Yeah. So I think, you know, containers are important, right? I can lift heavy enough, but you know, I'm 5'7" and you know, not a huge person. So, I have actually motorcycle ramps that would fit on the back of the transit van that could haul, you know, toters in there. But there's no way that I'm lifting any more than humanly possible.
Right. Yeah. I talking with Moonshot Compost in Houston, you know, they rented every vehicle, you know, possible for testing out what works best for commercial accounts. Mm-hmm. And they even had this driver who was like really strong, you know, he was a young guy. And he even said, like, with the 64 gallon totes, you can't roll those up any ramp. You know, you can if they're not filled all the way, but if they're filled all the way, they're easy 300-400 pounds. So, I know you already know this, but
yeah, there's no way I'm lifting that. You know, you think of somebody who's, you know, producing coffee grounds and that they're already saturated. It's, yeah, I think, you know, we get to the point where, you know, we have a bunch of commercial clients, you know, renting a box truck is certainly not off the table. You know, anything with a lift gate to make things safe and easy is definitely what I'm interested in.
So with the commercial accounts, you would do a swap?
Yeah, I think, you know, for those folks that are just pumping out waste and that, you know, they, not that the residential folks don't expect, you know, that, but I think it's for commercial, it's much easier to just swap things out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You guys have commercial clients too, right?
Yeah. And actually it's funny, we're kind of the opposite, where we do swap for residential, and right now we do swap for commercial. But we're moving towards just doing the emptying of the totes, because the totes pretty much live outside anyway, out at, you know, by the dumpster enclosure.
Right.
And you know, that's for our bigger generators, our restaurants, you know, like universities. But I think, you know, it is quite a pain to wheel the larger, heavier stuff. And we do use 64 gallon totes, which, yeah, you know, we you know, took us a year to finally say, like, we can't be swapping these out, you know. But at the same time, when you're talking a university that is producing close to a ton a week, you can't really give them just two dozen 32 gallon or, you know, small bins. You kind of got to go with the 64 gallon. And so, you know, the way I see that is we have to find a truck with a tipper, kind of like a garbage hauler, you know, tips. Right. and it's hydraulic powered. You know, we're really getting into the territory of being a more a larger hauler. And but I mean, I'm okay with that because we're diverting more food waste, and they're, you know, we're taking a bigger bite out of the landfill. So
yeah, absolutely. That's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'm currently in the transition period though. And it's like walking on shifting sand. Like every day we're using, like every day just curveballs, you know? But yeah, onto your processing, because I notice you also do your own composting. Do you have the, you know, opportunity to haul your food scraps to a commercial composting facility and you just chose to do it yourself, or walk me through that?
Yeah, so when I first got started, right, I actually was, I hope my town doesn't hear this, but I was doing some of it in the backyard. And you know, I think
play now, I mean,
yeah, well, hey, what are you gonna do? You know, I think a lot of people got started that way, you know, in terms of processing in their backyard and going, okay, like I'm doing the right thing. How do I do this in a way that is, you know, I guess, so that your neighbors are happy, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we kind of started out there, and you know, we're able to generate a bunch of compost out of the backyard. And you know, so like it obviously not a long-term solution at all. So mm-hmm. You know, I was able to partner with a farm that was able to provide some space. And so I do some of the composting there, but I do drop off to another partner as well, because it's, you know, it's my, I do everything kind of soup to nuts myself. So I do some of the processing there, but a lot of what I do just gets dropped off. I just physically can't handle all the volume. So it's really kind of at a smaller scale on the farm. I don't have equipment, so, you know, it's done in the good old fashioned way of shoveling and a pitchfork and turning.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah. So it's a lot.
And you do all, you know, you said you're up to around 1,000 pounds a week. You do that with a pitchfork and a shovel?
Yes and no. Every other week I will process, and then I will drop off,
gotcha, to a facility.
Yeah. And you know, the exciting part around our area is that they're supposedly building out a large commercial facility that's not terribly far from me. You know, I'm hoping that permitting and such goes through, because then I'll be able to just kind of take on more, which is really exciting.
Yeah. I mean, that is exciting for any composter, is not having to worry about the back end and just focus on collection and education, you know, marketing, all these things that are like, they're more gratifying than just being stuck at the composting site in a pile of slop. But someone needs to do it. And
yeah.
That's interesting though. Do you know the name of the commercial facility that's, you know, under review, I guess?
I want to say, yeah, it's McGill, I believe.
Oh, McGill.
They have a facility. They have a couple facilities. The one that I'm aware of is down, I think, in the Carolinas.
We have one in Gainesville, too.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so they're building one out here. So I am like chomping at the bit for these guys to get going and to break ground and to...
Believe me, I bet they're probably going as fast as they can. And what's holding them up is the bureaucratic process, which is amazingly slow. So,
yeah, you know, and the pandemic definitely did not do any favors from, you know, moving the ball down the court there. So I think that held things up, you know, when everything came to a screeching halt. But yeah, I'm hopeful that they'll get open at some point in time. I think early in 2022. I hope so.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah. Sounds like you're in the same boat as me. Like the demand is growing faster than you can handle it. So
yeah, and it's, you know, to me, it's one of those things that I'm going, oh my gosh, like, you know, landfills are not the solution for this. And it's so frustrating to me that not enough people are like, we need to do this like right now and have a place for composting and not make it so difficult to do so. You know, we don't have all of the renewable resources. They're not here for the rest of eternity. And, you know, in order for us to sustain ourselves and the ecosystem and, you know, lead a healthy life, you know, for the time that you and I are both here on the planet, but for other people that are, you know, going to outlive us and their future as well. To me, it's a no-brainer. And it just, it frustrates me to no end that other people don't see
it. It's weird. I mean, from a bureaucratic perspective, you know, the county and like the state's division of environment, they still look at composting in this kind of archaic way. Like, you know, like it's essentially like a landfill pre-sanitation. And, you know, back in, you know, that I think that the concern from their eyes is leachate is their biggest one, contaminating groundwater. But a lot of the times when you talk to them about what do I need to do to get this site up and running, they don't know. So, you know, there really is just not a lot of knowledge on either end surrounding this. And I think it would just be helpful for both sides if, you know, there was just like, this was given a higher priority rather than poo-pooing it and worrying about, like, you know, even if I invited them to my composting site and said, you know, here, take a look, what do I need to do? They wouldn't even probably, like, they would just point at some things. And I just don't believe that it's, you know, they really know very well themselves. So
yeah, I don't know. It's one of those things that I think needs to get figured out and figured out kind of quickly. You know, and for myself, it's like, you know, I look at things as well, you know, in a very holistic, you know, circular way. So, you know, in addition to being a composter, I'm a gardener. And so I grow, you know, as much of my food as I can, where I forage for it. And, you know, I want people to have the opportunity to do the same thing and, you know, stop using all of these synthetic inputs for food. And use compost and really see it as like, you know, the absolute goal that it is, that it, you know, you don't need to add, you know, all these other things. A little compost goes a long way. And same thing, you know, if you choose to keep a lawn, like you can use compost and not have to spray your lawn with all this junk that, you know, is just ending up in the waterway, ending up in the system. So you know, I think from kind of that perspective as well, it's
not only a waste issue, it's, you know, also a topsoil depletion issue, a food issue. And it's, you know, now with the Composting Act, I believe going to the Senate, it is exciting to think that the USDA is going to be dedicating more resources in the form of grants for composting infrastructure. You know, and anaerobic digestion is good. It's a way to recycle food scraps, no doubt, into electricity or biogas. But I feel like composting is really just hitting on not only the waste diversion fronts, but the kind of like the regenerative agriculture front as well. So
yeah, and you know, that stuff is just one, it's fascinating. Two, it's how we used to do things back in the day, which clearly worked just fine. I mean, it's part of me just kind of wants to get back to that and really, you know, nurture, you know, our land and what we have and, you know, eat this like really healthy food that, that is so important for our bodies and how we function and, you know, not putting chemicals in there. And
what are some of the most exciting partnership opportunities that you've come across there? And, you know, do you get a lot of opportunities to partner with different organizations or individuals?
Yeah, I think from like a from a speaking perspective, I get the opportunity to talk to a lot of people, which is so exciting, right? It's a matter of being able to educate and being available to answer questions that, you know, people are just curious about. You know, and to talk about something that you're so passionate about and know that you've left an impression on people that, you know, within an hour is just, you know, it's a lot of fun. You know, I've been able to talk to different communities and garden clubs and, you know, even my interactions at the farmer's market for people to just come up and say, hey, you know, I compost at home, but I have a question. You know, and to be kind of that community resource is, you know, I am the go-to person to ask, you know, whatever it is about composting and, you know, I have other, you know, interests related too. So, you know, to have all this dialogue and to meet people because of that is huge.
Yeah, you quickly become the authority on the topic.
Yeah, and it's great. You know, I think within my community, there's, you know, there are certain people that you go to talk about certain things. Like there's a guy that knows a ton about figs. You have a fig question, you're going to go talk to Craig. If you have, you know, a question about goats, you go talk to Kathleen. And, you know, for myself, it's composting. So yeah, it's fun to be part of that.
That's so awesome. I also really value those presentations, which a lot of them these days are just on a computer at home. But I really like going out and giving like the tutorials how to set up a worm bin, or even the tutorials like how to do a backyard compost. Of course, you gotta like, what I typically do for that is bring a bucket, a O-Town bucket of food scraps from one of our subscribers, and then maybe a bucket of like dried leaves or wood chips, and, you know, just kind of simulate what you would do. But also I make sure to mention, you know, the reason composting got a negative connotation about pests and odors is because people don't manage their piles. So, you know, that's why where O-Town Compost comes in, and we make it very convenient and easy for folks. So, you know, we have gotten a lot of subscribers, even though we're there to really demonstrate how to do it in yourself and in your own backyard. So,
yeah, same here. A lot of people have said to me, oh, I have a Tumblr and I do this in my backyard, and you know, I'm not really getting much compost out of it. It's kind of slimy, and you know, so there's people, they're trying, yeah. Which, you know, you really
Tumblers are definitely the most popular style of composting, and I still don't really understand them that well. I tell people they're batch composters. So yeah. Like you gotta, you know, save your food scraps for a week, add them to the tumbler with a mix of carbon material like leaves or wood chips, and then you tumble it every day for, you know, another few days, and that, you know, homogeneously mixes it. But I don't know how, like, you don't get much oxygen because it's a closed off plastic thing, and you don't get any like outside moisture from rain. So I figure it dries out, but, you know, what are your thoughts on the tumbler?
So I have two of them at home. The one I really hate, and the other one is not so bad. The one that I like is the Jura tumbler, and it's on the pricier side of things, but you know, I've been able to
What's different about it?
So it's a metal bin, and it has insulation on the inside of it. And it does have, you know, much like the, it has air holes and such. It's really easy to turn. I have a smaller one, and so you can't really put a lot in there. But they do make ones that are really sizable. And I know that, you know, Michelle and Java from Java's Compost use, you know, them and have set them up for folks. And yeah, I mean, my experience is that it was good. I actually was able to get the composter to, you know, get all the way up to 150 something degrees. So
Is it a batch composter? Like,
it basically is. I mean, it has two compartments in there. At least the one that I have has two compartments. So, you know, I kind of added, you know, the right mixture of everything. And
so you, like, the reason I say it's a batch composter, like, because you can't, like me, I generate food scraps every day from my kitchen, but you can't be adding food scraps every day to your tumbler, or can you?
I think you can. I mean, as long as you're adding carbon in there, and right. And I didn't water it. There was a, just enough, there was enough heat that, you know, condensation built up, and it was fine. You know, but the only drawback from this particular tumbler, in my opinion, is that it's a little bit cumbersome to get the compost out. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do add wood chips in there. So you're still going to have to screen it out if you really, you know, if you really wanted to. I don't care. I just throw it all in my garden. So, you know, that tumbler was good. The other ones that are like these plastic spinning ones, I think are horrible. And I don't really see much value in them if you're trying to get compost out. I just think they're hard to use and they don't hit temperature, and things just end up being a bit of a slimy mess in there. So
yeah, nothing deters a person like a heavy drum that you have to like rotate.
Yeah, it's not fun. It's not a good experience. The drawer spins really easily. So that was very nice. But yeah, I mean, I would much prefer just to build a pile and do it that way. So
So, you know, one of my last questions is, you know, Kona Compost is doing well. You just had a good August. You know, if you had to think about your long-term goals, you know, why did you start Kona, and like, what is the vision for the next, you know, 10 years, I guess?
Yeah, that's a good question. I was just chatting about goals with my wife, last night. So timely question. So, you know, I started it because it was a passion of mine, because I know that compost is just fantastic for the garden. And I think that growing your own food is important, and keeping food scraps out of the landfill is, you know, they don't belong there. So they belong in the garden, and really to create that, you know, closed loop system for people where, you know, they're able to make mindful changes, to make easy changes, so that, you know, we can really tackle climate change as a community, and keep growing food in a local capacity. You know, so that's really, I wanted to offer that service. I wanted to be available and be that resource for people in my community. You know, and down the line, you know, so here are the couple of things that I want to do is obviously to continue to expand on residential and, you know, grow the commercial side of things. You know, I want to be as available to as many people as possible in Bucks County, and really to get as many folks in the county composting.
Do you actually have numeric goals for a number of subscribers or accounts?
Yeah, but I'm not, you know, holding them super hard. It's, mm-hmm. you know, I think for me, like the first year and a half of growth, it was a lot of awareness. And, you know, I think, you know, if you're in a city, you have much more population density, and, you know, there's no real room to compost. So, you know, it's how to, you know, take that concept, roll it out to a bunch of suburban neighborhoods where people can compost. There is room if they want to do it, and offer a service that is better than doing it yourself.
For sure.
Within the next 5 years, my goal is to have 500 plus residential customers, and as many commercial customers that want to do it. So the other thing that I want to do is to have drop-off sites. So for the areas that maybe it doesn't make perfect sense to run a residential route out there, right? Because the county is large. And even though there are rural areas, there's little suburban pockets within those rural areas. So I want to make sure that those people have the opportunity to compost. And, my goal is to partner with other, businesses in the community to have little drop-off sites that make it easy and accessible so that folks can participate. And aside from that, I think having some products available is going to be really important, right? We do customer give back of compost in the spring, but I want to make sure that people have the opportunity to purchase compost, and other items that are available year round. So
right,
kind of where I see things going, really within the next 5 years.
Yeah, you want to put the compost in Kona compost.
Yep.
So yeah, we're the same exact way. We are a bit scarcity, like compost is scarce, despite, compost actually, we're producing a lot of it, but the problem is making sure that we have enough for all our subscribers for twice a year give backs. And it would be great to sell the excess. We want to donate to nonprofits and schools and community gardens. For our commercial accounts, compost give back is not part of the service. Although if they do request, we'll strongly consider it because we want to tell that story, like the full cycle of food scraps going back into compost and going into people's gardens. And, that's the beautiful thing about give backs for the residential subscribers. They even get if they're not taking off their fruit stickers, give them right back to them.
Oh man, those things are neck. Bane of our existence, I think.
Well, thank you so much, Heather. This has been a valuable conversation, and I'm sure you've inspired some other folks out there after this comes out. So thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to chat and to, for us to have continued conversation and spread the good word about composting.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll see you at the next convention in Cleveland. Hopefully next year.
I'll be there. I look forward to it.
All right, take care.
All right, take care.
Please rate and review on whichever podcast platform you're listening to. If you feel like this is good content and you're learning a lot about composting.